The Athletic.
Hello, welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. I'm Dan Bardell, joined by Greg Evans, The Athletic's Aston Villa reporter. And just before we start, you can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for a special prize of just £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. So go to theathletic.com/villapod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/villapod. Good morning, Greg. Sitting in your hotel room in Newcastle, fresh from an absolute goal bonanza from the Villa under-18s last night. How are you?
I'm good. I like that intro. You should have done my match report there, mate.
Good word, bonanza. You can have that.
Bonanza. Haven't used that one for a good 5 years. I'm good. I'm much fresher than the last time we spoke anyway.
I mean, we haven't used goal bonanza for the Villa first team probably since the Liverpool game back in, way back when, I think it was September, wasn't it, when Villa scored 7 against Liverpool. So it's the way Villa games have been recently, it was probably nice for you to see Villa run riot and score a few goals.
Yeah, it was actually. I put out a tweet on the full-time whistle just saying that it was probably the most enjoyable game I've watched of the season. And, you know, I'd actually put it ahead of the Liverpool game. I know it was under-18 football and Newcastle really weren't up to much, but Villa have now scored 15 goals in their last two Youth Cup games. And, you know, they are absolutely flying and they play some brilliant stuff. So fluid, you know, the sort of five or six attacking type players like interchange between their positions, and it's a real joy to watch them at the moment. Yeah, they're a really good developing side. So interesting to see how far they go. But yeah, last night was really enjoyable, mate.
Yeah, because I looked at Newcastle Twitter before the game. I try not to upset our producer too much here. I had a look, and Newcastle were relatively confident. They had a player in there, I think Elliot Anderson or something like that. They were confident that he was going to rip Villa to shreds, basically. And that Newcastle had some hot prospects and they were looking forward to the game. There's a few people with a tail between the legs when the 6-1 result came in. I mean, how good were the team last night?
I'm trying not to oversell them here because, you know, they've still got a couple of games to go until they could potentially go and win the Youth Cup. But, I mean, they were unbelievable. You know, that's the only way I could really describe them. There were a couple of commentators sitting next to me who were obviously going through the game. They'd watched Newcastle a lot this season. They were so shocked by Villa's sort of fluidity that, you know, Karnichuk, Wemke absolutely running the show, getting a hat-trick. And, you know, he is the real deal. I wrote about him this week and that, you know, there is no hiding behind it now. He is the real deal. He's pushing for first team involvement. And if Villa don't give him that, then there are plenty of clubs in Europe waiting to see whether they can be given the opportunity to give him those minutes. Because before he signed his deal in October, pretty much every club in Europe wanted him. You know, every big club in Europe, there were Man United and Man City and Liverpool were all interested. There were clubs in Italy and Germany, clubs in France, you know, Monaco were very keen to take him. And all of these clubs on the continent basically said to him, if you come to our club, then we will give you that fast tracking into the first team. Now, Villa, I'm understood, said that they would match that and that they would, you know, also offer a route into the first team. Okay, so Carney's been on the bench once this season. You know, that's a positive sign for a 17-year-old still. But I think he's at the stage where, you know, he's kind of waiting to kick on now, because that's what he was told alongside a lot of the other youngsters. So, you know, he's just one of this, you know, really, really exciting youth team. I thought Brad Young, who hasn't really had, you know, much written about him or much said about him.
He was the kid that did the spin in the Liverpool game, didn't he? Came on and did the spin.
Yeah. He played up front with Louis Barry out on the left. I thought that, you know, he was ahead of Barry in terms of that game. Thought he took his goal really well and looked a handful throughout. And yeah, there were other decent performances as well. Raki in the middle, big towering midfielder.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he seems to have a bright future as well. Kane Kessler on the right, who we've spoken about a few times already. And even as far as back as the defenders, you know, Lamar Bogard and Sil Swinkles, the two Dutch lads that they brought in the last transfer window look very assured at centre-half as well.
Yeah, speak a little bit more about Carney, because for me, he's got the physical attributes to be a first-team footballer. It's not like you're waiting for him to develop. He's got a very good build, especially for a central midfield player. He's well over 6 foot. He just seems ready, and he looks ready. And obviously, when you're banging in a hat-trick in the Youth Cup semi-final, you've got something about you. He's 17, so I'm not saying he's the same standard as Bellingham, but, you know, he's the same age as Bellingham. Players in Germany, Germany seem to have that trust to throw a youngster in. For Villa, at a time when the midfield's not really playing with any real panache, we're not looking great, central midfield. We've spoke about that on a few podcasts now. Are you surprised he's not been closer?
Yes and no, because I look at it from Dean Smith's point of view and I think, okay, he's a 17-year-old. Dean Smith would have seen him up close, you know, and compared him to the other midfielders that he's got. So he will know what Carney is doing in training and how close he is to the other players. Now, all I've seen him playing in is under 23 and under 18 games. So that's all I can compare him to. I tried to speak to as many people in the game as possible to try and get the most accurate and balanced view of where he's at. And a lot of people have told me that he's at the same level as Bellingham. You know, he's playing the same way as him. He's ready to go and kick on in the same way that Bellingham has, providing he gets the necessary exposure. So, you know, that's where we're at. But I think for Carney, the aim now is if he does get his chance, he's got to go and take it in the first team, because if he comes in and he doesn't really perform, or I'm not saying Jacob Ramsey's done anything wrong, but we're still waiting for that blockbuster performance from him, aren't we, for him to really announce himself on the Premier League stage. So I think with Carney, you know, it's even tougher for him to an extent, because there are so many midfielders ahead of him. So if he gets his chance, he's got to do it straight away. But you know, from what I've seen, he looks the real deal. People tell me he's the real deal. So in another, you know, if you flip it a little bit, it is a little bit of a surprise that he hasn't played, because Villa's midfield isn't performing as well as it has been. The way I look at it though is, I feel personally that John McGinn has suffered a little bit this season because of A, Douglas Luiz isn't as strong defensively in the second half of the season as he was at the first half of the season. And B, he's having to do a lot more in his role, in a deeper role now, which is completely different to last season, to sort of offset Ross Barkley. And now we know that what we've seen from Ross Barkley is that he doesn't track back and defend as much as, say, McGinn would do if he was in that attacking midfield position. So that means that McGinn is having to do more. Now, if Carney comes in and takes Ross Barkley's place, because Carney's not going to come in and be a sitter alongside Douglas Luiz or John McGinn. That's not really going to work. That's not his game. He grew up watching Kaká and building his game around him. That's who he loved growing up. So he's going to be an attacking player. He's going to be a number 8, a number 10. That's where he played last night and caused so much damage. If he comes in, is that going to make it even harder for John McGinn and Douglas Luiz to stick to their defensive duties? And will he do as much or more than Ross Barkley? We won't know that until we see it.
I mean, Dean Smith's the one that sees them training up close. He likes to play youngsters if he can as well, doesn't he, Dean Smith? So if he was ready and Dean Smith thought he was ready, I guess we would have seen him on the pitch.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, he has given some youngsters a chance, hasn't he? That, you know, there are some other thoughts that maybe, you know, he hasn't given the likes of Philogene Badais and Carney himself, you know, a go when maybe they might have deserved, you know, maybe an appearance off the bench or two. But it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because for Dean Smith, every single point is so important for him, you know, and if he can't just risk bringing in a player just to say, oh yeah, we've given him his debut, you know, let's give the kids a go. He's not at that stage ever in the season, because every point's so valuable for him, and he'll know that the players that he believes can get him those points.
I mean, you did your piece saying there was clubs circling around him if he doesn't get first team football, but he's signed a professional contract recently, so there's no need for Villa to sell. So I presume these clubs circling around really is not a major issue to the club at the moment.
I don't think it's a major issue right now, but it could be an issue moving forward. Yeah, you know, you've got the situation where Carney doesn't get minutes, for example, that's only going to increase the interest from elsewhere. The clubs that were previously interested in him will be back in for him. They'll be saying, well, you know, we wanted you before. We've kind of monitored you now. We think you're improving. We want you even more so now. Villa don't want to sell at this point and are under no pressure to sell because, you know, he's contracted to the club. So, you know, they're protected to an extent there. But if he doesn't get any minutes this season, for example, and then you go into next season, he's only got 2 years left on his contract. So from a club's point of view, you never want a player to be going into the last year of the contract because then the value diminishes so much. So there's a lot of things to weigh up, but I think everything will be resolved if he gets minutes. I think it's as simple as that, because if he gets minutes, he's happy. The other clubs realise that they probably can't get this guy. You know, he's got a development plan in this club and he's kicking on. But if he doesn't, then, you know, the options all open up again.
Yeah, I want to see him on the pitch because he's probably the most excited I've been about a young Villa player since Jack Grealish. It feels like we've known about him for a while now, and it felt the same with Jack now. I'm not saying for one second that he'll reach Jack's heights, but, you know, he's someone to be excited about, and I want to see him progress, and I don't want us to lose him. So hopefully that'll all get resolved soon. Just going back to the offer at the top end of the show, the $3.99 a month for 6 months, Greg, entice us in. What else have you been up to? What have you been doing, and what have you got coming up?
Yeah, well, just keeping on the Carney theme, you know, I've wrote a big detailed sort of background piece on what he's like as a player, what his upbringing was like, and you know, where he could potentially go in the future. You know, I found that quite interesting to put together because not many people know exactly what he's all about.
Big week for him. I mean, he scored a hat-trick and then he's having Greg Evans write two pieces about him. That is a sensational week for the lad.
Yeah, he's almost made it, hasn't he?
I mean, that'll mean as much as a first-time debut, I would think.
We just need Dan Bardell to tweet about him now and then he's...
Oh, I've done it. I've done it. He's ignored me. I've done it. Don't you worry about that.
No, look, he's going places and, you know, there are a lot of people that are saying he's the real deal. So I like to listen to people in football, and, you know, because they know more about it than I do. So that's the reason why he's getting all the hype this week. I also wanted to, you know, I did a piece basically on Keenan Davis and his first goal and how sort of long and hard it has been for him. And also Wesley returning as well. So, and there's a couple of big pieces coming up in the next few weeks. Bits that might be a little bit surprising, but will also be very interesting. So look out for those two.
All right. I'll ask you about that off camera when the podcast finishes, because I know you're not going to tell me. On air.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's focus on that West Brom game then now, and you've just alluded to it. Keenan Davis finally scores in the Premier League, although I do feel like some of the stats are a little bit harsh on him. It says like he's gone 50-plus games without a league goal. Very few of them have been starts, and probably most of them have been 10 to 15-minute cameos, so it does feel a little bit harsh, but he will feel, to corner Jolie and Lescott Fraser, like the weight has been lifted from his shoulders, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. I looked in the story that I wrote, I felt harsh saying it, but he scored 6 goals in 6 years at Villa. And I felt that was quite bad, but those are the facts. But, you know, if you're also looking at it, he's only played, I think, 157 minutes this season. And, you know, to get a goal and assist in those minutes is quite good. So, you know, I keep going back to Jacob Ramsey. I hope I don't mean to sound like I'm writing him off, or because I'm certainly not. I'm very much in support of him, but he's played 469 minutes as an attacking midfielder and hasn't got a goal or assist yet. So, you know, there's still quite a lot to like about Keenan Davis. I think that he works very hard. You know, you would have seen in his interview after that he's a very humble and down-to-earth guy. These teammates really do appreciate him. And I think the Villa Twitter account put out that this will be the first of many goals for him. You know, obviously they're giving him the big sell, but I agree with that. I think he'll get some more goals now. It'd be good to see him score, you know, again this season. And ideally get his first start of the season, really, because it's crazy, isn't it, that he hasn't had a go in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, that's two of the last three home games now where he's really come on and made a positive impact with two goal involvements. And to be fair, he was the one that changed the game. I know it was Trezeguet that scored the goals against Fulham, but I really felt it was Davies occupying the centre-halves that changed the game. He's doing all he can do off the bench at the moment, which I guess is all you can ask of people who are coming off the bench. He's giving the manager a little bit of a headache. Well, not even a headache, because I think probably he probably starts now.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? But we had this conversation after the Fulham game, and we were building him up for the Liverpool game, weren't we? And I don't even think he came off the bench, did he?
No, didn't get a minute.
Yeah, you know, let alone start. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Dean Smith does, whether he feels like he can mix it up, whether he feels like he can maybe shift Watkins out to one of the wings and put Davies, you know, central, or whether he can even play the two. With potentially Ross Barkley behind them as a number 10, you know, I think Barkley did well. I think he did very well in the last game. And hopefully that's a timely reminder ahead of his return to Everton that he can actually do something before the end of this season. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. Look, Villa have got plenty more options now, haven't they? Because Wesley's back as well. So it was quite fun, really, to see Villa finishing with three strikers on the pitch, because we only ever see them with one.
I can't remember the last time I saw three strikers on the pitch at the same time for Villa, probably back in the Steve Bruce days when he used to bring on every striker that was available at the club at the end of the game. If we were losing, we'll come back to Wesley. But just going back to Barkley, obviously you were at the game. How surprised were you to see his name on the team sheet?
No, I wasn't, Dan, to be honest. I kind of expected him to play. I just had a feeling. I don't know if it was just a hunch or, you know, Smith certainly didn't give anything away leading up to the game. But no, I wasn't surprised to see him on there, actually. And I thought he did well. He obviously won the penalty. Clever decision making in the attacking areas. He wasn't that liability type player that he was previously. He didn't give the ball away as often. I thought he tracked back and worked harder than he had previously. And when he was on the ball, he showed a bit of quality. I thought out of all the midfielders, you know, probably out of all the, you know, out of all the five or six attacking players minus Watkins, I thought he was the best player.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, he obviously still getting slated on social media, but that's social media for you. I thought he was our standout attacking player, the same as you. His stats were pretty good reading after the game, and you'll have probably got a better vantage point of what his work rate was like. Was there a visible difference in previous games?
There was, yeah, and I think he started the game quite well. What I seem to find now is every time he comes off the bench, he always seems to misplace his first pass, and he feels to me very much like a player who, if he gets his first pass off, or if he does something well in the first sort of passage of play, he then kicks on from there and builds a little bit of confidence. And there was a moment in the first half, I think he had like three or four players around him, and he managed to just wriggle away from them and just play a very simple pass back. But it was a nice bit of, you know, composed play. And from there, he really grew in confidence and started to drive forward a little bit more. And I was quite impressed with him. I feel that Villa fans were picking apart his performance a little bit too much. They suggested that because he went off on 82 minutes and Villa arguably looked better in those final 8 minutes of the game, that it was because he was taken off that Villa changed the game. But it's not like that, is it? You know, if you bring fresh legs on for those 8 minutes to really try and force the game, and it's like, you know, it could have been Barkley coming off the bench and really making a difference there with those fresh legs. You've got to remember, he's just run around for 82 minutes. He's going to be considerably more tired than Keenan Davies.
I think that's a bit harsh. Like you say, I think with 8 minutes left, Villa's game plan switched. We went a little bit more direct, swinging crosses into the box and trying to cause West Brom problems in a more direct manner rather than the patient build-up that we were trying previous to that. So I think that's lunacy, really, to be saying we looked better when Barkley went off. It's just that the game plan completely shifted. It was a tale of two penalties in the first half, Greg.
I've no real problem with either, to be honest. In the modern day, they're probably both penalties. I thought the West Brom one was softer than Villa's. I thought the West Brom defender was silly to make the challenge on Barkley because he was looking for it, but it's a penalty. The West Brom one felt a bit like the official was evening it up, but again, I've got no massive problem with it, and it's 1-1. But at that point, West Brom really had a go at Villa, and I felt West Brom looked the more likely to score, and obviously they did at the start of the second half. I actually think they're kind of in a bit of a false position because I think if Allardyce had been there from day one this season, I think they'd have more points. I think maybe they'd be somewhere up towards where Newcastle and Brighton are. I think they'd be standing more chance of getting safe. They've had some good results recently. So it was actually a tough challenge for Villa.
It was considerably harder than when they played them the first time around at the Hawthorns. You know, it was a completely different team. I was really impressed with West Brom's midfield, Gallagher, Maitland-Niles and Yakusla. The three of them all offer something very different, but they...
I like Maitland-Niles.
It's just Gallagher and Maitland-Niles, the way they pressed everything that Villa had and forced them into mistakes. You see McGinn and Louise making passes, misplacing passes, and that was... A lot of that was down to the fact that they really didn't have much time on the ball to think or look up even. And then Yakusla, he's more like a protective shield and just mops things up and has a bit more quality on the ball. I think that if Villa are looking for a defensive midfielder in the summer, that he could be a really good option. Celta Vigo will be letting him go. He won't be going to West Brom if and when they get relegated. So he's certainly somebody that could come into the reckoning if Villa might be able to get him for a decent price as well. So, just going back to what you said about West Brom, I think you're right. I think that the Allardyce factor is very much a real factor now, isn't it? You know, that they are picking up points, more points than they were at one stage in the season. It probably took him a little bit longer than at all of his other clubs that he managed to keep up. And I think if West Brom had the team that played against Villa on Sunday for the duration of the season, that I agree with you. I think they'd be up there with Newcastle and Brighton and standing a chance of surviving. So, yeah, it was a disappointing result for Villa. 2-2 against the team that are going down into the Championship isn't the type of result that you want, especially when... the games are running out, but I think the way they finished the game was very pleasing. And if they can take that into the Everton game, that they can still end this season with a flourish.
Yeah, West Brom generally unsettled. You talked about the midfield area there. I mean, Konsa looked the most unsettled he's looked at all season. He hasn't had a bad game all season, but he was obviously at fault for both goals there. Every player has an off game, don't they, Greg? And I think that was just Konsa's, wasn't it?
Yeah, just wasn't quite himself. Looked a little bit unnerved by some of the attacking players. You know, Pereira caused him a few problems at times. Mings was kind of the man that kind of was on Diagne, so Konsa didn't see much of him. But yeah, he just wasn't quite himself. And I think, in a really, really good season that he's had, every player's going to get one of those, aren't they?
I mean, you've mentioned Pereira. Let's go back to a bit of transfer talk. I mean, the West Brom Athletic correspondent, is Steve Madler? He wrote something about Villa being interested in Pereira, didn't he, in the week or straight after the game?
Look, there is a little bit of interest there from Villa. That it's not at the stage where they're considering, bidding or offering anything or seeing where it could go. He's just a player that they're very fond of, and this was before the weekend. He's had a decent season. He's into double figures now, which, okay, a couple of set pieces in there, but that's the type of player that Villa need. They haven't got a midfielder at the moment who's scoring goals, so he would fit nicely into the plans. I think he would be, I think he'd strengthen the team. And yeah, Villa are certainly interested in him. How far that interest will go remains to be seen in the summer.
It's fair. There's some tidy players at West Brom. Same with Fulham. If they drop, there's some good tidy players there. And Villa are going to have to try and bolster the squad in some clever ways. So there might be a few players at teams that go down that Villa can look at. And okay, maybe they're not going to come in and be automatic starters, but just a few players that can boost the squad a little bit, because we are very thin on numbers. That'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on. You've touched on it as well. The best thing about the game for me was Wesley coming on after a turbulent 16 months, really, really horrible injury, every ligament in his leg in absolute pieces. How good was it to see him on the pitch?
Yeah, it was great. He was only on for a few minutes, wasn't he? But that was a real a real milestone for him. Having been out for over 15 months, to actually get back out on the pitch would have been so pleasing for him. And you know, Dean Smith announced the team the day before the game, and the players all gave him a round of applause on the training ground, which was a nice moment. Tyron Mings was, you know, made a beeline for him straight on the full-time whistle to give him a big hug. And I thought that was a really nice touch as well. And he looked a little bit emotional, Wesley, yeah, when he was coming off, because it would have been, you know, quite touching for him to get back out there, because there would have been really dark times where he thought, you know, am I ever going to get back? Or if I do get back, am I going to be the same player? And he had a good chance at the end, didn't he? I mean, that would have been a real fairy tale if he'd put that header away. So it'll be interesting to see these next few games. As important as it was for him to get back into the team, it's now a real challenge for him to show that he's actually going to be an asset going forward, because Villa have invested a lot of money in him. They wanted some sort of return, but they haven't had anything for 15 months because of his injury. So, you know, Villa are going to go in for a striker this summer. So he needs to do something between now and the end of the season to show that he's still going to have an impact next year.
I've got to be honest, I wasn't really expecting to see him on the pitch on Sunday against West Brom, but the way the game was going, I suppose 4 minutes left, Dean Smith thought, I may as well chuck him on at this point. And to be fair, him and Davies in the box gave Villa something to aim at, and that was where the goal came from. And it's just nice to have those options, as we said earlier, because that's been a problem all season. Haven't really had a striker to turn to on the bench when games aren't going our way. And it's quite funny that the first time that we have had those couple of options, we do manage to turn a game in our favour at the end. But I'm a bit like you. I can't really work out how I should feel about that game, because I thought there was a lot of stuff in there that was really, really disappointing and poor from Villa. But then you kind of give yourself a day to take the game in and let your thoughts marinate a little bit. And there was some positive stuff in there. There was some good performances. It's a strange one, isn't it, with Villa at the moment? Because again, it comes down to, it's been a good season. It's been a really progressive season. There's been a lot of good in there for Aston Villa Football Club. But because of the way the season's ended, sometimes it's hard to look at it properly.
I mean, the cold hard facts are that it's a point at home against a team that are playing in the Championship. So that's what makes it hard for people to accept. But if you look,
I mean, at least we didn't lose.
But yeah, I mean, yeah,
absolutely, you know, devastated to lose.
You didn't lose. That was the main thing. And Keenan Davies has now got a goal. So now whenever Keenan Davies does come off the bench, you can actually start to feel a little bit more confident that he can come and change the game now. For so long, there's almost been that sort of kind of, you know, sarcastic sort of feeling where you think, oh, he's Keenan Davies, you know, here he comes, the saviour. But
there was a lot of tweets saying, I think there was one guy, if Davies scores, I'll get his name tattooed on me. So that guy's got to get a tattoo. Now, you know, when he comes on, it's like, some people are like, today's the day, it's finally going to happen. And obviously, yeah, the other people are like, you say, taking the mick, it's a funny one.
I mean, I've been saying all season, but maybe that's me being blindly rooting for him, but I've been saying all season he's going to come on and score a really big goal at some point. I'm sure you've heard me say that before. And
yeah,
he has only had 157 minutes, which really isn't that much. So, you know, he's done it now. It's done. He's got that goal. And hopefully that will help him kick on, because if he could get another goal now in the next couple of games, then you really start to think, well, actually, he could do something for Villa. And what better feeling would that be to get another academy kid through?
Yeah, albeit he's come a slightly different route through the really lower reaches of football. You just spoke to Dean Smith after the game. What was his general mood and his general consensus of the game?
Look, he said if we'd have lost that game, it would have been a travesty. You know, he was right. They had 25 shots on target, Villa did pretty much everything but scored, didn't they, for a long time. Ollie Watkins missed a good chance, denied by the woodwork a couple of times, Traore and Davies.
Elmo's big volley.
Yeah,
don't forget
Elmo had a big volley. You know, Sam Johnson, I think, made 9 saves in the game, which is, you know, quite something for a goalkeeper. So there were a lot of chances there, and there were some positives to take from it. And I think that, you know, I do think that the way Villa finished the game was quite pleasing, and that if they can take that into the Everton game, you know, that they can potentially get something out of that too. So yeah, Smith was relieved a little bit, but he was also very frustrated at the penalty decision, and the fact that probably his side weren't quite at it in terms of converting their chances.
Hold up.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Come on to the Everton game. I'm going to move now to the top three, Greg, because we've kept it on vogue as usual. We've got the top three Aston Villa stoppage time strikes this week, and I've been very specific. I've made sure that all three are in stoppage time. I didn't go the late goals route. Obviously, you know, the Gabby Blues goals would feature heavily there, so I've got plumped for three that were definitely in stoppage time. I've done my research, so we crack on with that.
Let's go.
Number three. Championship. So never great memories. Early championship as well, which was horrendous for Villa. But 2016-17, Jordan Ayew against Reading, penalty. Villa hadn't won an away game for something like 460 days or something absolutely ridiculous. And just the way the atmosphere was in that away end, it broke out into, that's where the don't look back in anger thing came from for a bit, where Villa fans were singing that after a game, didn't it? It was just, when you haven't won an away game for 400 plus days, it's a pretty big goal, isn't it? And that was a very calm penalty from Ayew, if I recall.
Yeah, I remember being there in that cauldron of noise, the Majewski Stadium.
What a stadium. Yeah, we should talk about that more often.
Unbelievable place. Fantastic nightlife. You know, real hostile atmosphere when you walk in through that.
You'd have had a good night out afterwards, wouldn't you, after that Villa week?
Real hostile atmosphere when you walked in. I remember being so intimidated when I walked through. I was sitting in the press box that day. I could hardly hear myself speak because of how loud the home support were. And obviously, looking to the right of me was that packed out away end. Villa fans, you know, in full voice towards the end. Bruce, wasn't it? Bruce's early games.
Yeah, Bruce's second game.
I think it was Yap Stam in charge of Villa at that point, and he was very...
Reading, you mean?
Sorry, did I say Liverpool?
He said Villa. He's in charge of Villa.
Yeah, in charge of Reading. And I can remember him being so frustrated in the press comments after, because Reading were trying to play that new sort of out from the back way, weren't they? And they kept getting caught by Villa. And a good memory, a cool penalty. I remember it well.
Yeah, those of you that are top three fans of this segment will remember a heated debate about the Majewski Stadium in previous podcasts. So go back and find that. Don't go back and find it, because actually it's utterly pointless. Number two, Greg. I've gone for Ashley Young against Everton in the 94th minute, 08-09. Jolyon Lescott thought he'd equalised for Everton. Well, he had equalised for Everton. Thought he'd salvaged something from the game, but about 10, 15 seconds later, Ashley Young runs down the other end and curls one home. That was a great Premier League moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. You know, I think a lot of neutral fans will remember that one as well, because was it a Sunday game or an early kickoff?
Sunday, 4 o'clock kickoff.
Sunday game, that's it.
Super Sunday, Greg.
Yeah, when Super Sunday was quite a fun thing to say. Now it's just very monotonous, isn't it? But Yeah, look, a brilliant breakaway goal, wasn't it? And I remember speaking to Paul Faulkner, the ex-Villa chief executive. Pretty sure he was there at the time. I'm sure I haven't got my
he would have been
mixed up here.
But... Yapstam wasn't the chief exec at that point.
Yeah, just thinking if I'm recalling the correct conversations here or not. But yeah, I think he said that he had gone to the game with an Everton director or something like that, or a friend, and he remembered just jumping around going crazy at Goodison Park. So that was a very special moment for obviously everyone that was there and watching on from the telly as well. It was a great breakaway goal, wasn't it? And a cool finish at a time when Villa thought that they'd thrown away their lead.
Mine O'Neill compared Ashley Young to Messi after the game. I remember that quite well. I felt like for a few games afterwards, he wasn't quite right after being compared to Messi, but a great player for Villa, Ashley Young. And that was one of probably his highlight in Claret and Blue. Number one, Greg. 2014-15, 94th minute penalty, Christian Benteke against West Brom. Again, Villa hadn't won for ages, and Benteke steps up with one of the coolest penalties you'll ever see in front of the whole end. Obviously, I was in the whole end at the time, and I just remember there were scenes of rapture and jubilation in there as he stroked it home in the 94th minute in a local derby. And that's gone down as my number one just because it's the one I remember the best. I just remember the celebrations in the whole end being something else.
Yeah,
one of your favourite memories. Looking back as a football fan, I'm absolutely sure about that. I won't say any more about it, Greg. Let's look at the Everton game then. Probably two teams who will look back on the season and feel that they might have been able to do more just because of the positions they found themselves in at certain points during the season. Everton have still got a chance to finish in the European places, really. So it'll be a tough game. Arsenal obviously gifted them a game last game week, as they so often do. So Everton come into it off the back of a win. Because we haven't played Everton, and you said something about us playing Everton. It's at Villa Park, isn't it? I'm completely confused with where the fixtures are now.
No, it's Goodison.
Is it Goodison? God,
yeah.
All over the place. Got to do better research, Daniel. Because we haven't played it. It's so bizarre to be like 30-something games in and to have not played a football team in the Premier League at any point yet this season, isn't it?
It's crazy, isn't it? You know, they're going to play them twice in a matter of just a few weeks. So when that home game does finally get rearranged. I don't think it's been sorted still yet, the home game.
Nah, I don't know what they're waiting for.
They're waiting for it, but yeah, look, I've been quite impressed with Everton. I think they've had a good season. Ancelotti is obviously a great coach. They've signed some decent players. The few times I've watched them, they've not actually played very well.
I feel like that.
Yeah, but they've continually picked up points, and they're right up there, and they can still finish with a flourish themselves. So it'll be interesting, really, because at the start of the season, it was Everton and Villa that were right at the top of the table, wasn't it? You know, at the very start. And we thought, wow, you know,
heady days.
Could one of these two teams, you know, really? Really make a go of things this season, but it's turned out that Leicester and West Ham are the two that have really surprised more than anything. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the two match up.
Everton have struggled at Goodison. I think that's been one of their major issues this season is home form. They've not picked up the points that they should have done at home. And if they had done, they'd have been somewhere towards where Leicester are pushing into the top four. So it will be a little bit of a disappointment because they've got Ancelotti. They've spent a lot of money, so you could argue that they're underachieving a little bit.
No, I think that's where they should be. Well, not no, should be, that's the wrong word. I think that's where their squad is about, I think, yeah. You know, they're one or two...
That's some good players.
They're one or two players away from a really good side, I think, but they're just not quite there for me yet. They're not quite as good as, you know, the other elite teams. So, I for me, they're in a position where I kind of expected them to be.
Yeah, I think the Everton fans are generally quite happy from what I see on social media. Just a thought I had with the money spent, some of the players they bought in, having someone like Carlo Ancelotti at the helm, I just perhaps feel it's a little bit of a missed opportunity for them this season to get themselves towards the European places, especially if Villa go there and win on Saturday, as we hope they do. That would put another dent into it. I just think for Villa and Everton, there'll be a tinge of disappointment that the seasons could have been slightly more than what they are going to turn out to be.
Yeah, that's the biggest frustration, isn't it? And it's right for Villa fans and it's right for Everton fans to want and expect more. That they've both seen their teams, you know, go through much brighter times in the past. They saw how their clubs could perform at the start of this season. So, you know, why couldn't they continue that throughout the course of the season? I think I actually think Villa are where I thought they would be anyway, you know, now. I think this is where we had the discussion.
Even when we had that start, though?
No, pre-season.
Pre-season, but I'd have been buzzing.
This was the discussion where we had, weren't we? We were hoping that Villa could finish mid-table, and but probably expected them to be around maybe 10th to 14th. After they started the season so well, I thought that they were capable of breaking into the top six. I thought that they would be good enough. But the injury to Jack Grealish has killed them, unfortunately. And until Villa are able to find a way to play without him, then they're just not going to progress, unfortunately. They're not going to get towards those real higher echelons of the table.
No, well, seems like a really positive way to end the podcast. I'm still hopeful. I'm still hopeful we can hit top 10. That's still my ambition, for us to finish top 10. Whatever happens, I think there's been some great memories this season, and it has been a really worthwhile and great season for Aston Villa Football Club. But I want to finish ahead of Arsenal, and I want to finish in the top half. That's what I want to do. And maybe Leeds as well. Let's finish ahead of Leeds as well. That's how I want to end the season. That's a bit more positive than the
six
end of the year gave us.
Then, yeah.
Oh yeah, all the way, Greg. Let's make that happen. Absolutely. Thanks ever so much for joining me from your hotel room. Now, I think you've already had your room service, haven't you? So maybe go down and you can get yourself another breakfast now, a second breakfast. That's what I sometimes do when I'm in the hotel. But yeah, enjoy your trip back.
Cheers, Dan.
Up the Villa.
Athletic.